Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Well, hello there. It's Chris Evans here, off the radio. Welcome to another tip-top edition of the Best of the Breakfast Show podcast with Sky from Virgin Radio. Coming up, the ridiculously ravishing and fantastically funny Rafe Spall talks season 2 of Trying on Apple TV+. Outlander star Laura Donnelly charms us with news of the sensational new sci-fi Sky Atlantic series, The Nevers. The always brilliant Bryony Gordon is back to discuss her incredible memoir, My Glorious Rock Bottom, The Paperback. And the main madman from Madness, Suggs, looks ahead to the band's awesome 14-date The Lady Killers tour. All of that and so much more to come. Now, Dapper Dave, tell us, who is our first guest?
He's Shaun of the Deaded, Life of Pied, Jurassic Worlded, and quite frankly, nailed them all. Series 2 of the brilliant Apple TV Plus series Trying premieres today, and here to tell us what to expect from a show about what to expect when you're adopting is the always wonderful Rafe Spall.
All right, Rafe.
Hello.
How are you?
Excellent. So happy to be out of the house.
You are excellent, in fact, at your job. You're a decent, very decent human being. You're a funny guy. You're great to have around. And you wear yellow socks all the time. Yeah. And Charlene and yourself have just talked about that. We had to drag you away from each other so we could get on with our show. Mm. You were having a big yellow sock chat. Tell us about that.
Well, actually, I'll class this as a mustard sock.
Okay.
I don't mean to split hairs, but yes, I solely wear mustard socks.
Oh, right, just mustard.
Yes.
Okay.
I've got a whole drawer full of them, and me and Charlene did have a chat about it because she's wearing them also. But it's a conversation starter.
Right, Trying, Series 2.
Yeah.
For people who aren't aware of Series 1, how did we leave you to your... First of all, who are you in the show? Who mm-hmm. are you married to? Who are your friends? What's going on?
So, yeah, the Season 1 is about a couple who are trying to have a child, and they're not able to do that naturally, so they go down the path of trying to adopt, which is quite a long, laborious process. And the end of the first season has them being approved by a panel, and then the second season is about them getting matched, which is just an arduous, if not more laborious, process than the first, because there's not that many kids in the system and a lot of parents competing for them, and so much hilarity and heartbreak ensues.
No, and it really does, and it's very hard for you to say that about your own show, and I know you feel a bit awkward about it, but it is hilarious, this show. It's properly funny, and it's hard to be funny nowadays because so many people have been funny for so many years before. So how do you do it differently? Trying Series 2, episode 1 and 2 out today on Apple TV Plus. If you have access to Apple TV Plus, get this show in your life. They're half hour episodes. They will make you smile, they will make you cry, and they will make you think. And what more do you want from a TV show in half an hour than that? I love the characters, I love the cast. The juxtaposition, of course, of you, your character, and his wife, or his partner, desperate for a baby, is the fact that you have best friends who have a baby but couldn't be, you know, on the surface, less grateful. They are, of course, really. So the juxtaposition of the other couple is what?
Yeah, indeed. Yeah, absolutely. But you know what? It's obviously a show about wanting to have children. Not everyone watching will identify with that. But I think what's identifiable is getting to a stage in your life and realizing and feeling like something's missing.
Yeah.
Feeling like there's a hole that needs filling, whether it's children in their case or career or job or geography or a relationship or whatever. I think that's a sort of identifiable theme running through it, that okay. something might be missing from your life.
Do we talk about the other couple and what they're up to, or is that a bit of a spoiler?
Ophelia Lovey Bond and that's her name, don't laugh, and Oliver Chris, yeah, they play a couple who have two kids that they've been blessed with having naturally, but he's had an affair.
He's had an affair. So the line when his new girlfriend, he's much younger than everybody else, drops him off at the church.
Yeah, yeah.
And all her mates say, because it's for the baptism, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So he's late to his daughter's, new daughter's, no, new son's baptism.
Yeah.
Because he's having it away with this much younger lady. He's going through a sort of pre-midlife crisis.
Yeah.
And of course, this woman turns up, drops him off, and his wife says, oh my God, she's so beautiful. And all the other girls say, yeah, but she's 27. Everybody's beautiful when they're 27. It's so
it's good. It's a good line. And, you know, he's the sort of character, his friend, that I think we've all got, those mates that you're sort of stuck with. You know, those people that you became friends with at university or when you were a young person. Uh-huh. And if you met them now, you wouldn't be friends. Yeah. And I've got people like that, and you know who you are.
Yeah. It's called the endowment theory. We talked about this before.
Is that right?
Yeah, it's the endowment. It's a psychological state of mind. And it's you can have it with things, but especially with people. And it's about the fact, well, once you're in, you're in. And it's very hard to get out.
Yeah, right.
But the conversation your character has with him by the side of the canal in Regent's Park. A, he wanted me to move straight back to Primrose Hill, like immediately.
I know.
But then you have the whole thing about the narrative. It goes into men and women, different psyches. Women are from Venus, men are from Mars.
Yeah.
What's really interesting is part of when you give them a ticking off is your partner can't believe that she, in her eyes, in a woman's eyes, you've just had a row.
Yeah.
Okay. And you're going to give each other silent treatment for at least 3 days. And about a minute later, he's showing you sports clips on Spotify or whatever.
Yeah. That's sort of representative of my life as well.
Because boys can do that.
They can.
It's different, isn't it?
Yeah. It does seem to be. I mean, that's the good thing about the show is obviously it's got a light and funny tone. And I'm pleased to hear that you think it is funny. But the writer, Andy, does a really good job of sort of dealing with issues. So in the first series, it's sort of about class. Because they're competing for these children and for approval with people that on the surface have got bigger houses, better jobs, blah, blah, blah. But we as the audience can see that they're just as deserving to be as parents as someone with a bigger house. And in the second season, he sort of deals with things about gender, and it's coming to the point where they have to decide what gender of child they have. They've not really discussed it. And he played by Esther Smith, who plays my partner, wants a girl. And I discovered that
I
want a boy.
Know, though. I didn't know.
It was just, I just sort of presumed that would be the case. And she's got a great line where she says, I don't know why you wouldn't just pick the better gender.
And then off you go.
Which is women. And I've got this line where I say something like, boys are simple. It's just, maintaining heavy machinery. It's just a wipe down with a damp cloth now and then, and they're good to go.
Which is basically true. I mean, there's a lot going on under the surface. But if we don't want to know about it, nobody else is ever going to find out about it.
Yeah,
and that's
exactly.
Sort of where we are.
Yeah.
And a couple of glasses of wine in and a takeaway.
But that's it. I mean, I've had arguments with friends and then having a laugh a minute later. Like, you just forget it. Whereas my experience of the female of the species is a bit more complicated.
Yeah, or sophisticated.
Oh, sophisticated. Yes.
Or can we conflate the word sophisticated and complicated?
I think you just go back to better.
That's such a killer line.
That is a killer line.
The best of the Chris Evans Breakfast Show with Sky on Virgin Radio.
She's a star of stage, screen, and now a supernatural Victorian London with a twist. The brilliant new Sky Atlantic series, The Nevers, is available on demand now. So, ladies and gentlemen, you would nevers believe us if we told you how good it is. So we'll hand over to the lovely Laura Donnelly.
All right, Laura, thank you for being here. Thank you for making your way here.
Thank you for vanquishing
the rush hour traffic back in London. Traffic jams are back. Traffic jams are back. We've never been more happy for traffic jams to be back. Laura, congratulations on the show.
Thank you very much. It is awesome.
It's got it all going on.
The
Nevers, all six episodes available now via Sky On Demand, or you can watch them week on week, 10:45 p.m. Sky Atlantic on Mondays. You sell it to the great British public because you've been doing it for a long time.
I feel like I have to talk as fast as you now.
You don't have to. I know we've got a lot to get in, and I want to give you as much juice as possible because it's such a good show.
Oh, well, thank you. I love it. It's a bunch of Victorian, mostly women, who suddenly, through an unexplained event, find themselves with these unusual abilities. But it's not, I wouldn't say superpowers. They're, you know, a lot of what they've got is totally useless. And
like the giant girl?
Well, exactly, the giant 16-year-old and the blue girl. You know, there's no use there whatsoever.
But that's why it's funny, because it sort of doesn't make sense. But then it rattles along with its own momentum. First of all, who doesn't want to go in the car? We won't spoil things, but there's a car. A car appears literally from nowhere, or the last place you'd expect a modern-day futuristic car to appear from. Did it really work? Did you really have a go?
I've driven it, and Anne, who plays Penance, has driven it. It's brilliant fun.
Oh, my goodness me. But it's got it all, this. It's got a bit of sci-fi in. It's got high drama in. You know, when what's supposed to be playing on theatrically, or to be playing theatrically in a Victorian theatre, turns out to be not a performance, but reality within fantasy. That really messes with you. That's a great scene.
Oh, yeah, and Amy Manson, who plays Melody, is just
Yeah, and
fantastic.
Fight scenes. But tell us more about your character. Tell us how much fun you had. Tell us about the fight scenes. Tell us about injuries. Just get people fired up so they tune into the show, because it's really good.
It's by far the most fun character that I've ever played. I do get to do absolutely everything. It's, you know, I spent 6 weeks training, stunt training before we started. And then, you know, by episode 3, I was doing a week in Pinewood Studios in the water tank, and I'd never done anything like that before. And so I get all of this stuff, but at the same time I get to play this really, really layered, complex woman who, you know, it stretches my acting skills, and it's just, you know, there's so much drama, there's so much emotion to it, and at the core of it, it's just a really, really human story, and it has stuff to say about the society we're in now.
It does, and it says it, you know, with a skip in its step, and also again another lightness of touch. It's funny. It's scary. It's right. It's wrong. It has Olivia Williams as well as your good self in it. James Norton takes his clothes off after
yes,
about 5 seconds. By the way, again, if that isn't the best first 5 second on screen audition for, do you want a bit of this Bond? Then I don't know what is. Surely he's got to bag that gig.
Oh yeah.
Tom Riley, Eleanor Tomlinson, Amy Manson, Pip Torrance, Nick Frost, and Ben Chapin, to name but a few. Mm-hmm. What a love!
It's the most incredible cast, and we have such a good time. I mean, it's no exaggeration to say that, you know, 5 a.m. calls for me every single morning were just no problem. I just leapt out of bed.
There's only one bump in the road.
What's that?
Okay, so me and my wife watching last night, thinking, this is good, this is good, this is good. No, this is really good. No, this is really good. Wow, no, this is off the charts. So I said, the kids, watching the first 15 minutes, I said, the kids are going to love this. She says, well, let's just hold that thought for a second, you know. I said, why? And then about a minute later, I thought, the kids might love it, but they can't watch it.
Yeah, it's made by HBO, so that's just, that gives you everything you need to know.
Do you know what? They could watch the first 15 minutes, because I went back and checked, and I want them to watch the first 15 minutes, but they can't watch anything after that.
No, well, yeah, I think you can just fast forward certain bits, you know. That's what my dad used to always do when I was a kid, if I wanted to watch things. Just
all right,
you know.
Where did you make it? How long did it take? How much fun did you have?
It took forever, because we had several
forever.
Hiatus. Yes,
it took forever.
Yes,
still taking.
It's still going. We're still shooting the first season. We have another 6 episodes of the first season to do, because COVID and lots of other different dramas and hiatus and all the rest. We shot these first 6 episodes in 2 years, and it's finally out. We have another 6 episodes.
But it's very
to
filmic,
do.
Isn't it? It could be a movie.
Yeah, absolutely. And the first 2 episodes are shot by Seamus McGarvey, who is just, you know, the most wonderful cinematographer, and he has done so many different really incredible massive films. And what he does with that visually is just stunning.
Visually, it has a touch of Guy Ritchie's Sherlock Holmes about it.
Yeah,
if you don't mind me saying. Is that all okay? You never know whether to compare and contrast.
No, that's what I love about it. There are a lot of different comparisons, and people think they have a bit of a handle on what it is and say, you know, it's Victorian X-Men or whatever, and you know,
Victorian X-Men. Yes, please. Well, Victorian X-Women, actually.
But if you make it to the end of episode 6, I think you quickly realise that it's doing entirely its own thing. It flips whatever you think it is on its head pretty quickly.
And also what's interesting about it is it's one of those shows where the characters could be so sort of, so extreme and grotesque in their size, if you like, their cartoonishness, that it could be unbelievable. But it's not unbelievable, even though it's complete fantasy, we think, but then what's life anyway? You know, whose dream am I in? Am I in yours, or are you in mine? Or what the heck's going on? But also, everybody, you know, it's one of those gang shows, isn't it, where the ensemble cast, because you're all on fire, and everybody playing every single character absolutely nails it.
Yeah, I mean, it is you've got all these, you know, very, very well-known British actors who have been on your screens for years,
like
people you haven't.
The mum and dad of the little girl in the first episode.
They're wonderful.
They're so funny.
Yeah.
You go, I'm not sure I like you, I don't like you, I think I like you, oh, I don't care, I'm just happy that you're on my telly.
Yeah, totally.
That kind of thing.
Yes, absolutely.
Well done, Laura.
Thank you.
Oh, you are more than welcome. You are awesome. Laura Donnelly, The Nevers. All 6 episodes available now via Sky On Demand, episode 2. Monday, 24th of May, on Mondays, every Monday, 10:45 Sky Atlantic, if you prefer watching telly that way.
The best of the Chris Evans Breakfast Show with Sky on Virgin Radio.
We love our next guest, and we suspect she might even love us a little bit. Dapper Dave, who am I talking to and about?
Put simply, she's the first person you call for a sideways look at the world. Her open and honest memoir, Glorious Rock Bottom, is out now in paperback. So please welcome a lady that knows the pen is mightier than the sword, but that both can be dangerous to hold when you've had a drink. It's the brilliant Bryony Gordon!
Very nice intro. Hello, Bryony.
Hello, Chris.
Welcome.
How are you?
Welcome back. Amazing. You look radiant. You look rainbow-esque.
I've got dressed up for you.
Oh, I know. Well, thanks so much. You are here. You're live in the studio. You said you might be a bit too excited for the interview.
I have a... This is the most... I'm in central London in a studio with Chris Evans.
How does it feel to be back in a building like this after Zooming for the last 12 months here, there and everywhere?
It feels so nice. I realise, I don't know about all of you guys, but I certainly get someone with a history of sort of mental health issues. And I always say that mental health issues work by isolating you. And I... When this all happened, I thought, oh, great, my diary's empty, I can be alone. Yes. But I realised the bit of my brain that sort of said, oh, great, was all my sort of alcoholism and depression, and I've gone into myself, so it's really nice.
It's funny, because a lot of people said the same, haven't they? Mm. Similarly, it's had the opposite effect to what they thought it might have done, from both poles.
Yeah. I think there are people who have experienced depression and anxiety. I personally felt quite well prepared for it. I've been preparing for the end of the world since I was about 9. So I was like, oh, this is okay. I've been having lockdowns in my own head since I was a child. Yeah. This is, you know, doing one together. But I do think as things have gone on, it's I can't swear because it's 9:29 in the morning.
Yeah, but and it's not a podcast.
It's not a podcast. I'm
like
so overexcited.
Right, now we've done this interview a couple of times before. Bryony Gordon's Glorious Rock Bottom is out in paperback now, the Sunday Times bestseller. What have you learned from talking about the book that you've written that can tell us more about the subject matter?
Well, alcoholism. I mean, every time the messages I get about, like, I write books like this so I can meet other people like me.
Yes.
Because I thought I was the worst human in the world, a mum who was an alcoholic and an addict. And writing it was part of getting rid of the shame. And the messages I get, the more I talk about my alcoholism and all the things that I thought made me really weird,
yes,
the more I realise how normal I am. And how normal this stuff is. I don't know, having a book out like that during a pandemic when I haven't been able to meet anyone, but the messages have been incredible, especially from women who've been through it too.
And so when you talk to people in recovery, in one type or another, you know, or sometimes several types at the same time, one person, you can palpably sense that their liberation. They feel freer than who they're talking to. Because you've had to face yourself, you see yourself coming back, haven't you, in the mirror?
I was on the way here this morning. I was thinking, I was driving through, we're in a car going through central London and going past all these places where I'd done appalling things and gone on benders that 37-year-old mums shouldn't have gone on. And I had this sort of visceral feeling in my stomach of shame. And then I thought, you don't do that anymore, Bryony. And it's remarkable. 4 years ago, if you told me that I would not, you know, that I could live life without a drink, I wouldn't have believed you. Like, I couldn't imagine getting through the day without a drink.
Yes.
And the fact that I haven't had a drink for coming up for 4 years now, and I do feel liberated. I do feel free.
But you still get that trigger panic when you pass those places.
Yeah, and I think it's important that I do, because I can romanticise, you know, May, when the sun eventually comes out. I'm like, oh, maybe a glass of rosé in the garden. And my husband's like, absolutely not.
Never.
You've never had a glass of rosé in the garden. You end up having 3 bottles and then you call up a dealer and then... sorry, that's probably a bit too frank for the morning. But so I need to remember how dark it got for me, you know, and how it still would. And if I picked up a drink today, it wouldn't be one or two. It would be, let's go, oblivion.
Yeah, but you pick it up, you know, Bryony Gordon picks up the drink and then Bryony Gordon leaves. She exits stage left because it's not you that caused the dealer. It's the alcohol that caused the dealer, isn't
it? Funnily enough, I've had no desire to do. And the things I used to do when I was in active alcoholism were so out of kilter with, I think, who I was as a person and the places I'd find myself, like yeah. the seediest things. And I, you know, it's like I said, it's a disease of shame, like most mental illnesses are. And I absolutely think addiction is a mental illness. And it works by isolating you, by telling you you're a freak and that you're alone and no one's going to understand what you're going through. And not only does someone understand what you're going through, there's someone out there who's going through what you're going through. There will be someone listening to this show. There will be more than one person listening to this show this morning who has woken up in shame because they didn't mean to do it again, and they did, and they wake up and they say never again, never again, never again, and then they get to 10:30, 11 in the morning and go, I'll just have one, do you know what I mean? Yeah. And that's the process, but it's something remarkably common. And for me, I don't know, just the knowledge that I am not I'm not a bad person.
Yeah, yeah.
I was just an ill person who sometimes did bad things because of that illness.
Yeah, and that definition of the difference between shame and guilt, you know, guilt is I did something bad, and shame converts that into I am something bad.
Yeah, yeah, and I'm not bad.
Right.
And whoever's listening this morning who has come round from bender or keeps finding themselves in this alcoholic haze, you are not bad either.
It's great to talk to you.
It's so nice to
meet you. I love talking to you. Bryony Gordon, she's an amazing human being. The world is a better place for her, even though for a while she didn't realise it. But we all did. We all knew. We all knew, Bryony. The paperback version of Glorious Rock Bottom is out now. And this podcast that she's been doing for 4 years now, the Mad World podcast, from wherever you get your podcasts, is also available to listen to. Anything else you'd like to say before you go?
Will you come on my podcast?
No! Too scared!
The best of the Chris Evans Breakfast Show with Sky on Virgin Radio.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
All right, this is the Tip Top edition of the Best of the Breakfast Show podcast with Sky from Virgin Radio. We've already heard from some undeniably magnificent guests already, but still so much more to come. The wonderful Anne-Marie Duff tells us about lending her support to Dementia Action Week and how you can get involved. Sky Sports F1's Crofty is back to rev us up ahead of Sky F1's live and exclusive coverage of the Monaco Grand Prix. Former SAS trooper Jamie Hull tells us his breathtaking and almost unbelievable life story with his new book, Life on a Thread. And rockstar, friend of the show, and Virgin Radio presenter extraordinaire, Texas Charlene Spiteri wows us with the band's 10th studio album, High. All of that solid gold is on the way, so let's not dilly or dally and get right back to it. Dapper Dave, who's next?
Madness have always been one step beyond the competition, and thankfully they're hitting the road later this year to prove it. Tickets for the Lady Killers tour go on sale this Friday, so if you like heavy, heavy monster sound, stay tuned as we welcome the nuttiest of all the boys. It's Suggs!
All right, Suggs!
Good day to you, good sirs and ladies.
How are you today? You look really well.
Thanks, mate. Yeah, thanks. No, I've been out in the garden a little bit. Yeah, I've been planting potatoes, you know, and all that old carry on, you know.
Tell us about your potato planting, because there are various methods.
There were. But the first thing is, what I did last year, is don't dig them up too early. Right? Right. I was a bit
too
carried
keen.
Away.
Too keen.
I was a bit carried away, right? And my brother-in-law came round. We had a couple of glasses of wine. I got two marble-sized potatoes. But boy, they were tasty. They were so good. We had one each.
That's so cool. Right, yeah. Now, apparently, the word on the street, Little Bird, has told me that you performed a live gig on Friday at the Palladium.
Yes.
Tell us about that.
Yeah, yeah. And we've been planning to do something for a little while, if nothing else, to let our fans be aware of the fact we're still alive. In any capacity. But it was nice because I saw a few of those live streams with certain bands, you know, and good luck to all of them. But, you know, no amount of dry ice and doing the sign of the devil wasn't going to alert me to the fact that the singer was very obviously not performing in front of an audience,
yeah.
You know what I mean? So we decided to sort of celebrate the fact there wasn't. And Charlie Higson, who's my next door neighbour of Fast Show and great comic writer, helped us write a little theatrical kind of... He plays this ghostly impresario. And we sort of do a chronological jog through the history of the band in the full knowledge that there's no one in the audience.
Really?
But I think it went pretty well. Yeah,
well done.
Yeah.
And are you going to take that forward to the forthcoming tour?
Well, I don't know. I mean, it's called The Get Up, by the way, and I think it's still available online somewhere. But we're not exactly sure. I mean, we've only just, you know what I mean, getting our heads around working together again. But it was fantastic just being in a rehearsal room and doing something. Yeah, it's been great. I really felt a weight off my poor egotistical shoulders, you know.
But isn't it funny? Because so many people have been saying similar over the last 12 to 14 months. People who thought they loved what they did, but didn't realise how much they loved what they did. That kind of thing?
Yeah. I was reading about that. Chris Martin was saying that, re-evaluating the whole... Because you've been doing it 40-odd years like me. I mean, my wife, my lovely wife Anne, said, it's like... She called it performance Tourette's. She said, every time, can't you see people running away from you as you go towards the bus stop? Hang on a minute, there's another one. I feel her hand on my collar,
it's
dragging
funny,
me back indoors.
He's so funny.
But, you know, it's not, and I never thought about it as an egotistical thing, but it's obviously a very important, you know, but your job, you know, you is getting something out of it, innit, performing, yeah.
Yeah, no, it's so important, and it's reassuring to remember that you do love what you do, and not only that, but you're so identified with it, not because you thought one could be forgiven for thinking the world identified you with your job more than you did, but it turns out it might be the other way around, you know.
I certainly miss it, mate. You know, I mean, I'd perform to a lamppost right now.
Well, you would now, wouldn't you? Exactly. But in the past, you wouldn't have performed to a stadium.
I can't be bothered going down there.
Tell Wembley I'm down. Not tonight. But they're already all there. I know. But, you know, seriously.
Oh, no, not Portsmouth.
I can't feel the muse this evening. That kind of thing.
Exactly.
Right. So I'm intrigued about the Charlie Hickson creation. Because Charlie's a genius. He was in. He's got a new kids' book out. It's fantastic. It's called Worst Holiday Ever. And it's so funny. I think it went to number one straight away. He's on a couple of weeks talking about it. But you had the theatre show, the musical. Have you done a film? Have we talked about a film before of Madness?
Yeah, I mean, we did a film in 1981. It was like a sort of docudrama called Take It or Leave It. But not since. No, they were going to make a film out of the musical, which was called Our House, which was...
Which is a gangbuster, wasn't it?
Which was great, which was a big hit. One that Ivan Novello and whatever the other bloke was that made statues, you know, for people in the theatre.
The Olivier.
The Olivier, him as well. Mr. Olivier. Sir Olivier. But the thing we did with Charlie, this Get Up that's just online, was great because, you know, we're just messing around and he was like, and it sort of seemed, I didn't quite know where it was going, but he was getting quite sentimental in his old age about how, you know, we have been through this really bizarre time, and the ghostly person he plays says, but don't worry, it will come back. And the Palladium was the perfect place because... Who hasn't been through their portals at one time or another? So I think it worked in that sense. So we're being a bit stupid, but he's actually being quite serious about the fact that we will all be back together, hopefully soon rather than later.
So do you think we're done?
Thank you, mate.
OK, have a great half pint later on.
Thanks, well, we'll do.
And
or two.
You know, George Best only used to... No, Bobby Moore only used to drink half pints.
Did he?
Yeah, because when he was out with George Best, so if you see a picture of him and George Best out together, George will have a pint and Bobby will have a half, but Bobby was having three halves to George's pint. And that's how he did it. That's how he did it.
Well, I mean, I don't want to be, you know, whatever, but I find that's what happens. Halves are very confusing. They're very easy to lose track of how many you've had, haven't you?
You want to try a schooner?
It's like, Maker, and I'll give you a lift home. I've only had a... Was it how many halves do you think, roughly, went? Seven? No, but they don't count, do they,
no,
halves?
No, that'll be... Well, they do. That's the
they
problem.
They do, exactly.
All right, Soaks, I love you. Thanks so much.
Thank you very much, Chris. Thank
Cheers,
you, everyone.
You're very welcome. Madness.co.uk. Go there for all things Madness for 2021. Madness are back in business. Bigger and better than ever before.
The best of the Chris Evans Breakfast Show with Sky on Virgin Radio.
She's the shining light of British theatre and telly that knows a fine cause when she sees one. The Alzheimer's Society Dementia Action Week kicks off today, and here with why we need to care about social care is a lady well-versed in the important stuff. It's Anne-Marie Duff.
All right, Anne-Marie.
Thank you so much.
So, dementia first, a hair second, or t'other way around? It's up to you.
Let's get the hair out of the way.
I wish I could. I wish I had hair to get out of the way. I don't have any hair to get out of the way, Vassos. It's really annoying.
Really.
Right, what are you two chundering around your
just
hair?
Just the joy of first haircut.
Tell us. Come on, tell us, ladies.
Just sitting in the chair.
Yeah. Having a beer.
If only.
Watching the game.
Having a chat.
Yeah, certainly.
Yeah, just talking nonsense with somebody you know a little bit.
Yeah, exactly. And just... Yeah, I can't put the euphoria into words.
Well, last Monday, you were just pre your post-lockdown, first post-lockdown 3.0 hairdo. Yeah. Pretty good a week on. Of course, you had date day, didn't you? But you didn't have your date day till the weekend, and you had to keep your new hairdo sort of box fresh 4 or 5 days.
Sleep for 5 days.
That's that what it was.
Like a geisha.
Just... When did you have yours done first post 3.0?
Actually, I had to wait a little while. I had to wait a few weeks because the queue for the hairdressers was mighty.
Well, looking good, feeling good and doing great here. So one way to be a 1% better every day as a human being is do no bad and do more good. Anne-Marie Duff is talking about Dementia Action Week. Where do you want to dive into this, Anne-Marie? It's up to you.
I suppose I should say about why I got involved.
Please
with
do, yeah.
Alzheimer's Society. I, like a lot of people all over the world, have somebody in my family who's living with a form of dementia. Mm-hmm. My brother Eddie, who's 2 years older than me, has been battling with very, very early onset Alzheimer's for about, I guess, about 11 years. He was only diagnosed about 3.5 years ago. But there was a long period of me watching him, worrying about him, not knowing what really was happening, him being misdiagnosed, nobody understanding. And then suddenly, there was a sort of series of events where the universe just kicked in.
Yeah.
And my lovely GP called me up. I was working at National Theatre, just come off stage, and the GP called me up and said, your brother's just walked into the GP's surgery. Sorry, I'm going to get upset, but I don't care. And said, I really need help and I don't know what's wrong with me. And so she called me up and said, I think we need to send him off to the hospital just off Russell Square, the neurology hospital. And he was there for a couple of weeks and got his diagnosis. It's very unusual for somebody, you know, that young to be living with something like that. So it's been a phenomenal time for us all. But I cannot stress how amazing social services have been and the care system has been. And that's the reason I'm here today, you know, to try and encourage more investment in that world. Because I can't tell you what it meant to suddenly be able to sleep through the night, not worrying that he was somewhere walking around London, not knowing, you know, all of those things. So, so I got this email from Kerry Mulligan, who's a mate of mine, a little while ago saying, will you help me raise some money for Alzheimer's Society? I was like, this is mad, you know, because it's such a coincidence. And then I jumped on board. I met lovely Scott. And so that's me now, and I'm just trying to help out as much as I can, you know?
Right, and the blessing within that is that your brother had the perspective, the self-awareness and the moment to be able to realise he was in such a state that he needed to go and see someone, which is, as I say, it is a blessing, isn't it, that he had that awareness, and not everybody will. Because we talk about self-diagnosis a lot on this show for different conditions, you know, and it's giving yourself a plan in life, you know, or a framework within which to spot things going wrong, you know, whether it's with your kids or yourself or your job or anything else. And so then you get in that, you know, hopefully you get to speak to professionals straight away. What kind of foundations did they start to lay straight away as far as you?
The first priority was housing.
Right.
Yeah, that was the very first thing, because he's a single man.
Right.
Which weirdly helped him in lots of ways, because often partners, husbands, wives, mothers, fathers, or sons and daughters, depending on the age of the person, they are sort of left to deal with it. So we had that strange blessing, really. But a lot of people don't, you know, they are... You know, because there's a weird kind of assumption that, oh, you can cope.
Yeah.
And you can't. It's, you know, you as it progresses. And the prognosis, of course, with any form of dementia is random. Nobody can tell you, oh, so what we're looking at is a sort of 10-year journey or whatever.
It's a freaky disease, isn't it?
It's very freaky. And for a very early onset, it can be very aggressive.
Right.
So, you know, you don't know where you're going to be tomorrow. I saw Eddie the other day, and he's been grand. He's on good form. I see him, you know, as often as I can. Luckily, he lives really close to me. And I said to him before I left, I love you, mate. And for the first time, he didn't know what I meant. Oh. You know, and it's just that every day is totally different.
Yeah.
And so if you're living with that, if you're caring for that, there can be aggression, there can be anxiety, there can be utter confusion, as we all know. And so to be trying to negotiate that, manage that, and not feel ashamed because you can't cope.
Yeah.
And there's so much shame attached to it, isn't there? I feel so, you know, if you've made love to somebody and suddenly they're disappearing before your eyes,
yeah.
you feel desperately guilty that you can't fix them, help them. But you can't. It's like a cobweb, you know?
Yeah. It's there's nobody there to negotiate with, because they come and they go. When they come, you make the most of them. What you don't want to be doing is having issues with them when they're there. You
yeah,
know?
That's exactly it. And we're all human, and we've yeah. all got nerve endings, and we're all frightened ourselves at the best of times.
Yeah.
You know, never mind if somebody's really challenging us. You know, so this is what I suppose this week's all about.
Anne-Marie Duff has been here talking about Dementia Action Week. It starts today and it actually runs till Sunday, the 23rd of May. Please get involved. alzheimers.org.uk/DAW is where you need to go. Hurrah for Anne-Marie Duff. Come on. Live round of applause. We never do this.
I'm so grateful for the applause.
We love you.
The best of the Chris Evans Breakfast Show with Sky on Virgin Radio.
The Eurovision Grand Final is tomorrow night at 8 p.m. on BBC One, and the only thing more entertaining than the performances is the commentary. So let's stare straight into the camera and with a slightly annoying delay say, come in Rotterdam to Virgin Radio's very own Graham Norton.
Good morning, Graham.
Oh, bonjour. Bonjour to le monde at Virgin.
Oh, Graham, it's so great to have you on the radio on Eurovision Eve. This is so cool.
Well, also, I feel just feel so clever because I'm in my hotel room at yes. a desk and I have set up a full studio by myself.
Yes! This is unbelievable. And also, you've snuck us inside the BBC bubble. Well done, my friend.
I know. But this is like, this is honestly, putting this thing together, it was like defusing a bomb yesterday. But I did it.
Well done. Congratulations. So the day before Eurovision, what do you get up to?
Well, about 12 o'clock, I'll head over and we see the first kind of stagger through rehearsal. And then, of course, because it's 2021, there's a bunch of COVID tests to be done. And then we see the kind of second stagger through. And then tomorrow I'll do my show from the hotel. And then you see the final dress rehearsal. And then on the night, whatever happens on the night happens on the night. Yeah,
so exciting.
But it's a weird one because there's a kind of a tension in the air because Iceland have tested positive for Corona,
uh-huh.
and the poor old creature who won last time, isn't that terrible? I can't even remember his name. Duncan Lawrence. He was set to do all his new music. He was going to be the star of the grand final, and he's tested positive,
oh,
so he
no.
won't be there. I know, he's waited 2 years for this, his big moment, and it's not happening. So there's a kind of a slight kind of tremor where we're thinking, hang on, if people start dropping like flies, what's going to be left for the grand final? But anyway, well, fingers crossed.
That's proper inside skinny from the horse's mouth from Graham Norton live in Rotterdam with Eurovision. Any other breaking news Eurovision stories that tell us about?
Well, I mean, Iceland got through. They weren't there last night, but they got through the semi-final, so they're yep. in the final. But I mean, if they win, how peak 2021 will that be? They're sitting in a hotel room watching themselves win Eurovision and they're not there. But they might win because they are. People love them. They absolutely love that group from Iceland.
Does it have a running time? Is it open-ended? What's the skinny there?
I think it's, I mean, I think they say every time it's supposed to be 3 hours or 3.5 hours or something.
Yep.
But, and I imagine the Dutch are on it. I mean, even flying here yesterday with KLM, they were sort of like, we will be landing 4 minutes ahead of schedule. And you thought, yeah, you're on it. So I think this will be one of the more timely Eurovision Song Contests, unless something goes wrong. Touch wood, it won't. But yeah, I think they'll, it's other countries who know they're never going to see this again. It's like they don't want us to leave. No, there's more. Look, there's some children dancing. So I think we might be going. And also, Duncan Lawrence isn't there. So what are they going to fill the time with? So we might come in short. We don't know.
So what's the longest it's ever felt?
Oh, I mean, the longest one that ever felt long
yes.
was when we were in Baku
right.
in Azerbaijan. Because that show did not start local time till midnight.
Mm-hmm.
So you know, you just, at midnight, that's bedtime, that's jammies. And we're having to go, welcome to the Eurovision Song Contest. And knowing that there was hours and hours ahead of us. So that was pretty grim. So this will be lovely. This is only an hour difference.
All right, what was flying like? You know, what's it like going to an airport nowadays?
City airport, lovely. I mean, quiet as a quiet thing. There was nobody there. I got to spend some quality time with the sniffer dog who's been trained. I had to have a photo op with the new sniffer dog. He's trained. Get this. He's trained for something digital, something. So he can smell SIM cards and he can smell... What else can he smell? Something else. And it's to do with terrorism, counterterrorism. Isn't that clever?
Very clever.
Yeah, who knew SIM cards had a smell? But they do.
Did he recognise you as a very successful TV and radio host?
No, in fact, he seemed a little lacking in confidence. I feel like he's new on the job.
Aww.
And he's not. He was a bit timid and shy, but very, very sweet.
All right. Now, your radio shows are going to be broadcast live pre and post. I'm very much looking forward to both, as always. I love your show, Graham. You know I love your
show. Thank you very much,
Chris
Evans.
I really mean
that
from the bottom of my heart. But I'm particularly looking to the post show. Post Eurovision on Sunday morning at 9:30. I just have a sense it might be a little more interesting than if that's possible than your show always is anyhow.
Do you know what?
Yes.
You know, you think it would be like, you know, those shows they do on Radio 1 after the Brits.
Yeah, come on.
It won't. This, I think, is going to be my first ever dry Eurovision.
No.
I know. The Dutch government, there's no booze post 8 o'clock anywhere. You could, for love nor money, you cannot go.
Really?
8 o'clock. I know. So, yeah. It's going to be a shockingly dry Eurovision. Unless, you know, I don't know. I don't know. But as far as I know...
Hang on a minute. What were you going to say? You were going to say something then.
No.
Yes.
No. I'm sure some delegations might have gone the extra mile.
They'll take
but
a
I
chance.
Imagine the BBC won't have gone the extra mile. So we will be dry, very dry.
All right. Well, you have your guests on your show still. You've got a proper radio show going on from your hotel room. Well done, pal. Setting all that stuff up. See, it can be done anyway, can't it? I mean, we have these beautiful sort of technical, gorgeous studios, exec studios on the 17th floor. But frankly, we could do it under the stairs if we had to.
But here's the thing, Chris. Let's not count our chickens. I haven't done it yet. let's have this congratulatory chat on Monday.
All right.
When I've successfully done two shows for a hotel room in Rotterdam. But does it sound okay? I think it sounds all right.
It sounds great. We were warned there might be delay, but there's none whatsoever, so it's cool.
Cool, man.
Very cool.
It's all great. Right.
Graham, lovely to talk to you, my friend.
All right, take care. Bye-bye.
Have a great weekend. Bye. Graham Norton live from Rotterdam, pre-Eurovision there. Eurovision Eve. He's on your radio tomorrow, 9:30 with Rich Jones and Tom Edison. On Sunday, similar with Angela Scanlon and Billy Howell.
The best of the Chris Evans Breakfast Show with Sky on Virgin Radio.
Fast cars, the glorious Riviera, loads of money. And for this weekend, the dulcet tones of our next guest. That's right, the Monaco Grand Prix is live and exclusive on Sky Sports F1 this Sunday. And here to tell us all about it is the commentary equivalent of a billionaire's yacht. It's Crofty!
All right, Crofty!
Good morning, bonjour to one and all, how are you?
Very well. Well, let's start at the beginning. What about the McLaren livery for the weekend? I love it.
Doesn't it look utterly gorgeous? To be fair, that golf livery is back. Lando Norris and Daniel Ricciardo have got special tribute crash helmets as well. Well done, McLaren, for making an effort this weekend. But let's face it, Chris, if you can't make an effort in Monaco, you'll never make an effort anywhere.
Yeah, exactly. Is there a specific reason for this? Is there some kind of anniversary that they're looking towards?
I think it's more a marketing ploy by Zak Brown to try and get Gulf to sponsor the car a little bit more in the future and to show them what they could have for a little bit of extra cash.
What I'm loving about this year is the Lewis Hamilton factor like never before. In as much as Crofty, we are now truly discovering once and for all, because there is parity on the track between manufacturers, that Lewis Hamilton may well be, turn for turn, straight for straight, braking for braking, the best driver of his generation and a generation either side as well.
Yeah, I mean, to be fair, it's very difficult to compare the eras. But put it this way, the people that tell me I'm wrong when I tweet nice things about Lewis Hamilton, I've stopped tweeting to say that I'm wrong.
I agree.
Because I think the statistics are all bearing it out. The guy is an absolute machine. not just in what he can do on the track, but the way he can do it year after year after year after year and seemingly get better year after year after year after year. I hope he wins the title this year, because at 8 world titles, it puts the debate to bed to me. He is, in my opinion, the greatest driver we've ever had in Formula One. Wow. And the fact that he every year is a fresh challenge, and every year he conquers that challenge, just proves it more and more. I think we are watching history in the making, and it's a joy to see.
Yeah, but also I agree with you entirely. So not but, I think, I suppose, is what I'm saying. The fact that he's against Max Verstappen this year, so it will be eight titles on the bounce, but also with Max Verstappen in a pretty equal car. But the thing Max hasn't got, and this is becoming more and more evident by the race for me, is that you can't fast forward that experience, can you? And that is really Max may well be as good a driver as Lewis. It's just that he doesn't have as many flying hours under his belt.
Well, absolutely, you know, and that's why Mercedes pay top dollar for experience when it comes to Lewis Hamilton. Why he's such a wanted man by any team in the paddock. You can have as much natural talent as you want, but eventually you have to go deep into the memory bank to work out a way to beat someone in a tight situation, and that's what Lewis does. And you know, if Max Verstappen is still around, and I hope he is, in Formula 1 in 10 years' time, we'll have the same conversation about Max Verstappen. But you're absolutely right at the moment. He's 5 years in, he's driving brilliantly, but he's not the finished article yet.
And also, Lewis, in many ways, is sort of the Ronaldo of Formula 1, because he might still be here in 10 years' time. What about that?
Yeah, well, he's making a lot of noise at the moment about wanting a new contract, wanting to stay around, fresh challenge in 2022. With Lewis, I think it depends which way the wind's blowing when he wakes up in the morning. Sometimes he's like, oh, no, I've had enough of this. There are other things I need to do. The next day, it's like, no, I'm fresh for the challenge. I think he'll stay around for at least 3 years.
Yeah.
10 might be stretching it a touch, but 3 years, I think, is about right.
Crofty, you never know. All right, other headlines to look forward to this weekend on Sky Sports, Sky F1 and the Monaco Grand Prix.
Oh, listen, it's a massive weekend of sport. It's the Formula One, then it's the end of the Premier League. Come on, West Ham, you can get into Europe. And then it's the golf as well with the USPGA. But in terms of the Monaco Grand Prix, Saturday, you've got to watch qualifying on Saturday. Pole position, so important. The pole sitter's led the first lap every year since 2002. It's going to be really, really competitive. Mercedes, Red Bull fancy their chances. Ferrari think they're in with a sniff as well. And watch Lando Norris come good and Daniel Ricciardo in that beautiful McLaren. I'm expecting good things from them this weekend as well.
OK, not having gone for a couple of years to Monaco, my favourite Grand Prix on the card, it's made me promise myself that if I'm in a position, if I'm able to go to Monaco from now on until I'm no longer able to go, I'm just going to go every year because I miss it so much. It's, you know, it's only a thing. It's a first world issue and all this kind of stuff. But that brings me joy, the Monaco Grand Prix, and I'm just going to try and get there every year from now on.
And next year is going to be amazing because the crowds will be back in their entirety next year. We've got boats, we've got a few fans. It's not the same this year as it has been in the past, but you can do Monaco on the cheap, so don't feel you have to be a multi-millionaire to do Monaco. It's a race that everyone can come to. But when you can find an invitation onto a yacht and you can sip somebody else's champagne in the sunshine on a super yacht, it does make the experience a touch better, doesn't it?
Yeah, no, it's a very good point that, because it's more accessible than most on a budget, isn't it?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, you can sit on the rock for about €70 for the ticket. The grandstands are not hugely expensive. You can stay in Nice and get the train in or Monton. There's plenty of things you can do that don't involve multi-million pound checks.
Just a quick one. Back to the McLaren and the golf-inspired vintage livery for Monaco this weekend. It's going to be great to see that car around the track. They're going to get lots more coverage. It's a very clever move because it's such eye candy. I think. What about every year they just had all the teams just all vintage their cars up every year for Monaco? Wouldn't that be cool?
Yeah, wouldn't that be great for commentators? There, Chris, trying to give me much more work.
You can do your eyes closed, Crofty. He can smell who's in the lead and who's being lapped. Thank you, Crofty. I love you.
You too, mate. Take care.
Goodbye.
The best of the Chris Evans Breakfast Show with Sky on Virgin Radio.
He's been to hell and back and has put pen to paper for a glimpse of exactly what that feels like. His debut book, Life on a Thread, How My Fight for Survival Made Me Stronger, is out now. So ladies and gentlemen, brace yourselves for a story you will never forget from the awe-inspiring Jamie Hull.
Good morning, Jamie.
Good morning there, Chris.
Congratulations on this book. It is an amazing read, my friend. For people who don't know, what happened to you?
Yeah, thank you very much. Let's just say, it was quite an ordeal.
Okay, when was the ordeal? Where was the ordeal? How come you were in the situation you found yourself in?
The date was the 19th of August, 2007, and I embarked upon a flying training course. It was a personal ambition to learn to fly, a light aircraft specifically. And it was in Florida. So Florida airspace, the incident occurred in the USA back in summer of 2007.
So light aircraft, you're out, you're training, you're flying, you're well on your way to your PPL, your private pilot's license, and you were doing circuits above the airfield, and the engine on your plane caught fire. What happened next?
Yeah, so as you say, the engine flared whilst I was working in the pattern at 1,000 feet. So to give you an idea, my first alert as the pilot in command of that small light aircraft, I looked out the left-hand canopy window, and I sort of had to look and look again, not quite believing what I saw, a thin streak of visible yellow-orange flame, and it was emanating from the front portion of the fuselage, so where the engine is. And no sooner as I sort of recognized it and I made my sort of final turn, sort of left banking into wind now, so setting myself up for a final approach, the fire then immediately breached the cockpit internally. So I looked down and I spotted flames lapping around my feet and ankles at 1,000 feet as I was starting to drop from that level on my final approach.
Okay, and as you descended, the flames climbed ever higher. Adrenaline kicked in. They were very quickly up to your knees and then your waist. But all the time, you had just had to focus on landing the plane. You know, it's the first lesson we learn, isn't it? Land the plane when you're learning to fly. Can you describe the last 10 seconds before you landed, please?
Sure. So there was an initial panic, but I managed to sort of get a grip around about the 500 feet mark. And basically then my mind just switched to emergency protocol. So I just followed that drill, that emergency protocol. So turned everything off in sequence. So engine, controls, instruments. And I'm now gliding in. And as I veer away from the concrete hard runway below, and I'm heading towards a grassy sort of stretch of grassy embankment to my left in the distance. That's my sort of focus. As I'm gliding in, descending, trying to scrub off as much airspeed as I could, but being conscious not to scrub too much and risk stalling the aircraft. So I managed to glide in smoothly as I could, ditch the headset. So I ripped my headset off the head and threw it in the opposite footwell on the right-hand side, opened the left-hand canopy door, and then very, very low level, so sort of about 20 feet, having judged it by eyeball, managed to clamber up onto the seat, climb through the now open door aperture to my left, and then got on the wing, balanced momentarily, and then went for it. So it took a giant leap from the trailing edge, the back of the left wing, and I jumped from a height of about 15 feet, running in at about 30 knots.
All right, so you'd survived the landing or the crash landing, but you weren't aware how severely you had sustained burns. You were still on fire when you hit the ground, and how quickly did people come to your help?
Yeah, so you're bang on there. So I basically, having jumped, the motivation was that I was, you know, on fire within the cockpit and just desperately need to sort of, you know, have that exit plan to get out. So that was the method, if you will. And then I rolled around in the long grass like a man possessed in order to smother the flames. My right shoulder was still on fire, my right scalp like a sort of a Roman candle. And then I actually witnessed my own aircraft sort of pile in about 70 feet away in the distance. And I caught a glimpse when she was sort of nose heavy, left wing down, and the prop was probably about 6 feet above the ground when I caught glimpse. So I watched it crash land. Then there was a pregnant pause of about 8 to 10 seconds. And then she blew up. It was an almighty explosion. And then I just waited. I mean, I desperately tried to crawl away, but I managed to get about perhaps 15 feet. And I was utterly spent. I mean, I was completely exhausted at that stage. The adrenaline sort of probably dropped off in the body, which had carried me through up until that point. And I was just done for. And I knew that in my conscious that my life as I knew it was over. Yeah. You know, I was burned from as far as I was concerned, from head to toe. My eyes reacted, and I was now sort of beginning to go blind with the reaction to the burns to the cornea of both eyes. And so my mind, my mental state was now a desperate sort of scramble just to sort of hold on. But I gave it everything I could. And about 15 minutes later, I heard the sort of woo, 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 and the, you know, the emergency sirens in the distance. And I knew that, you know, it was pretty obvious they were coming from me. Those sirens grew louder and I just held on, you know, like, you know, to describe it, I held on for the listeners, you know, like a mouse on a thread, but conscious in my mind that at any moment now the thread was likely to sort of snap and that would be it. Me sort of tumbling into oblivion, sort of game over.
Well, Jamie, congratulations on writing the book. I know that you do a lot of amazing work now. Jamie has rebuilt his life. He's run marathons. He partook in the race across America, climbing Mount Kilimanjaro. His book features 33 chapters split into three parts. Jamie is now a Health for Heroes ambassador. Thanks for being on the show, pal.
You're welcome, Chris. Cheers.
Okay, it is an awesome book.
The best of the Chris Evans Breakfast Show with Sky on Virgin Radio.
Oh, wow, what an outfit that is. Cool. Rachel, please describe.
This is an absolute gem of a, I would say, a sort of a jade green jumpsuit, buttoned to the top with a fabulous orange stripe, a pipe along the collar.
Oh, yeah, pipe
topped
collar.
With a mustard hat.
Do you know what this is? This is a butterfly catching suit.
Is it actually?
What?
It actually is.
And that's the
is.
Only
that's
way
the God's honest
you would expect
for
Charlize Fattari to announce her arrival on the show. It's brilliant. It's got a certain playfulness about it, hasn't it, as well?
It has a certain playfulness to it, which I'm very happy about.
Okay.
Especially when you wake up at 5:15 in the morning.
Don't start moaning and groaning to us about getting up at silly o'clock.
It's not that. How do you
I was up 2 hours before you, pal.
How do you
I could have
do
been
that?
Around and done your lawn and before
alarms.
You woke up and left and you wouldn't know anything
that's
about
just,
it.
It's just wrong. Mm. I mean, seriously, you just want to go back to sleep.
Were you silent disco dancer too? Say what you want.
Yeah, I was. Did you see that?
Yeah,
I was
did,
literally.
Yeah.
I mean, we were doing the whole thing.
You want, but you...
I did feel like I was in at the silent disco in London Zoo, going woohoo in me suit, me butterfly suit.
Woo Zoo. Okay, so this album, Hi, it's out a week today. You can pre-order it at texas.com.uk.
Please.
Yeah, no, go ahead and do that and get on to texas.com.uk for all tour information. You can buy tickets now. You can go and stay at Ali's house. It's like rock and roll Airbnb. It's all going on. Of course it is. So Charlene's here, Johnny's here, Tony's here, Eddie's here, Kat's here on the drums, smashing it on the drums. Kat is here for Kat. Woo!
Yay!
Unbelievable stuff. James on sax. Hi, James. How you doing, man? Now, that is a sax. I mean, he's got another one, by the way. He's got a backup sax, like he needs one.
He's got a whole posse.
Has he? All right. If you want sax, he's the man to go to. Alistair is on guitar, of course. Al, how you doing, mate? Okay, good. He hasn't been given a microphone, quite wise.
No, don't ever give him a microphone.
What's the point?
No, we've been saying for years, what is the point? He used it to like put his astrion or something. See, it's in your head now.
Of course it
Can't get away from it.
Where, how big are you where else other than the UK? You're biggest here, are you?
No, we're biggest in France.
France, okay.
France is our biggest market.
That's pretty cool, isn't it?
Then Spain.
And all the band, they flew in French for interviews and promo and things like that. Eddie,
nobody does promo apart from me. Nobody's allowed to speak.
Es-tu sûr?
Je suis très très belle.
Right, now listen, I haven't heard the new album. So I've heard a couple of things, but not all of it. So
it's rocking.
Does it have a vibe all the way through?
I'm actually got a copy for you, but I did forget to put it in my bag.
I've got you in vinyl,
and I've got you in a cassette because I know you love a cassette for the car.
Well, it's the only way I can listen to things.
Yeah, I know
on
it is true. Because somebody went like that, take him a CD, and I went. Don't be stupid.
Do you know what a CD might get there?
Really? Okay.
Yeah, but a cassette definitely, 100%.
I'm going to get you a cassette, but he comes in white vinyl, red vinyl. We've done the whole thing.
All right, and vinyl in the garage at home. I could stop by and pick it up if it's where I think it is.
Yeah, it is.
Okay, I'll do that because I'll have that in the garage at home.
Yeah, great.
If it doesn't get blown off. Right, what else? But tell us about the sound, the vibe of the album.
So the album is, well, you've heard Hi and you've heard Mr. Hayes.
Yeah.
So it literally goes from, you know, like you've got that kind of, there's like a country feel, there's like the big cinematic sound. It goes into disco, it's got soul and blues, you've got the big ballad, you've got, it's got everything, it's got like a sort of Bob Dylan folky sound, it's got all stuff.
I'm excited.
Oh yeah, and I do a duet with Claire Grogan as well, which I've never done.
There's just that.
I've never done a duet with another woman, so it's amazing. Claire Grogan and I do a duet together, which was something fantastic.
What was the band she was in?
It was funny. So that is that Johnny McElhone's band, that Altered Images mob.
All right, you know what? They ring a bell. No, do they? I'm not quite sure. Who knows? More from Texas. Go to texas.com.uk to find out more, to buy more, to just join in more of the fun.
The best of the Chris Evans Breakfast Show with Sky on Virgin Radio.
Thank you so much for listening to this, the podcast of the Virgin Radio Breakfast Show. Don't forget you can subscribe and get it every week from wherever you get your podcast, and you will never miss the weekly roundup of all the best bits from our Virgin Radio Breakfast Show with Sky.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.